we've done something like this before, but never exactly this. Tonight, instead of me just asking two or three questions or whatever, here are a bunch of common or not so common Purim questions that come up, and maybe you'll let me know which ones you want to talk about. There are 14 of them that I'm willing to talk about, and just a few more I added on the bottom of the list afterwards. So if we spend, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 minutes in each one, we can get through a whole bunch of them. So take a minute or two to read the list. And what?
They can't
read the list on the recording. It's okay. They'll figure it out. I thought that was a silly one. I'll start with that one because I don't have anything to say about it. Number 7, can I put fortune cookies in my mishloach manos? With my own written fortunes. I think the person who's asking the question was concerned about. Well, what were they concerned about? Lo tenachshu, this kind of thing. Chukasaku, avod zara. I don't think so. I don't think it's an issue. I think. What? No, I mean, even if you go to a Chinese restaurant and you read the fortunes from the fortune cookies, like, I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think anyone takes it too seriously. Although they're not even fortunes usually. They're just things. They're just statements. Although I mentioned this to somebody today, and they said, and the person said, you know, my in-laws on their first date went out to a Chinese restaurant. And my mother-in-law got a fortune in her fortune cookie that said, a lifetime of happiness awaits you. And she kept the fortune and still has it. I said, oh, now I believe in it. No, it's silly. It doesn't. So I don't think it's a problem at all. Okay, 1 second. So let's do something else between 1 and 14. Leave the edible pot one out. That was my brother trying to be funny. But I sent him the list. Yeah, anything from the top 14.
Number 12.
Do you say Alan Isim in benching at Shalashudas? Okay, this is very Nogea. Lemaisa, what? Ah, and I mentioned that it's different than what we had this past week. Now this. What? Oh, how did it, but let's deal with this question first. Again, do we say Alan Isim benching at Suda Shlishas? Let's assume for a moment that your Suda Shlishas runs late. It runs into the night because you end it when it's already well past Shkia and likely past Tesach Chavim according to many Shitos. So what do you do about benching? Can you say that this year that Purim falls out on Matzoy Shabbos, do you say Al Anisim because at the time that you're benching it is Purim? Do you say Ritzei because when you started your meal it was Shabbos? Do you say both? So how does one deal with that difficulty? So we discussed over Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch writes in some Kuf Pei Chesif Yud, that if a person is eating Shalashudis on a regular Shabbos, and Shabbos ends, he should still say Ritzei, Da'azlinan Basra Schalas HaSu'udah, because we go after the beginning of the meal. That's what we look for in terms of saying Ritzei. However, the Mishnah Berurah then writes, Ulefichach, Imchal Rosh Chodesh b'Motzai Shabbos. If Rosh Chodesh is chal on Motzai Shabbos, Yaz Kibur Birch Samasun Shal Shabbos Levad V'lo Shal Rosh Chodesh. You only mention Ritzei and not Yalav Yavo. However, says the Mishnah Berurah, that's only if you finish the meal Miba'od Yom. But if you ate Pas Gam B'Layla and you therefore have a Chiyuv to say Yalav Yavo as well, and you can't say both, because you can't say Ritzei and Yalav Yavo when Rosh Chodesh is only on Sunday, how could you say B'yom HaShabbos is there, and then say B'yom Rosh Chodesh is there? Rosh Chodesh is not on Shabbos, says the Mishnah Berurah, better to say Yalav Yavo, because that's a Chiyuv L'Kulei Alma. As opposed to Ritzei, where you started the meal on Shabbos, yes, we paskin, you're supposed to say Ritzei typically when you start the meal on Shabbos, but it's at least a machlokas. Yalav Yavo, there's no machlokas, and that you would for sure have to say. Then the Mishnah Berurah later on backs out on that and says, you know, some say that you could say both. That you could say both Ritzei and Yalav Yavo, and you're not worried about the Tarti Desasri, because you go Basadas Chol Sasuda, and also Shah Hashem Varech Bo, meaning there are two Mechayevim in the benching. There's the Mechayev of the food that you ate when you started your meal, and there's the Mechayev of the food that you continue to eat well into the night. But the Mishnah Berurah points out that b'motzai Shabbos l'chanukah u'purim afilu im gomer su'udasu b'layla eino mazkir shel chanukah u'purim rak shel Shabbos levad. Says there is no doubt that on this Motzai Shabbos, which leads into Purim, there is no doubt that you do not recite Al Hanisim and you only say Ritzei. Kim debelav hachyaskar meinamor hamor dechanukah Purim einu el reshus, because haskaras meinamor by Chanukah Purim, the mentioning of Al Hanisim and mentioning by Chanukah Purim to begin with is only reshus, is not a chiyuv, and therefore he says there's no doubt that reciting Ritzei is more important. Now, on a typical Shabbos in Yom Tov, the Mishnah Berurah quoted two deos. Whether you say, so again, I think the way we clarified it over Shabbos is that if you ate your entire meal mibo'od yom, there is no machlokas. It's obvious. You say Ritzei. If you ate your entire meal mishchashecha, you probably shouldn't have done that. But there's also no machlokas. It's the Alev Yavo. The only machlokas is you started the meal on Shabbos and you continued the meal late into the night. Two deos that the Mishnah Berurah has. Either you say only Alev Yavo in a typical Rosh Chodesh situation on Motzai Shabbos, or you say both. Now, there are people that are knowing both ways. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav suggests to say both, as long as you had a Kazayis Mishech HaShecha, and a lot of Hasidim are knowing that way as well. But what is clear according to everybody is when it comes to Ritzei, when it comes to Yalav Yavo, I'm sorry, when it comes to Al Hanisim, that you do not recite Al Hanisim. Okay, so that is that's that issue. Any of the other it's a chiyuv. I didn't say it's daraisa. It's a chiyuv. Askaras anymore is a chiyuv. So by Rosh Chodesh we try because it's machlokas. So I don't know if you have that same concern over here. By Rosh Chodesh we try to be makbid to finish by shkia so that you won't get involved in this machlokas, because then what do? We have machlokas whether you should say both or only say Yalav Yavo. But since by Al Hanisim there is no machlokas, I don't think the poskim are so makbid to try to finish. You know, the idea of being extra careful to try to not eat any pas lachar ben hashmashos is quoted from Rav Yashiv, Shmir Shabbos Kilchsa quotes from Shlomo Zalman, but it's really all to avoid a bracha. And it could be that even then you're allowed to eat other foods, just not a kazayis of lechem after shkia. They quote in the Sefer Vizos HaBracha, he quotes that idea of just making sure not to eat after shkia from Echad Migdalei Adar, and that's the trick in the Sefer Vizos HaBracha, is every time he mentions Echad Migdalei Adar, it's Rav Yashiv. How do I know? Because he writes at the beginning of the book. Whenever Rav Yashiv didn't want to be quoted on every page. So whenever I write Echad Migdalei Adar, it's Rav Yashiv. He tells you exactly who it is. But you have to read the beginning of the book to know. Okay, so Rav Yashiv and Shlomo Zalman, they both held that way. But I would think on this week it's not necessary to finish before Shkia, although you may want to get a move on it because they're changing the clock and you know you're going to want to start Purim sooner rather than later. Okay, number
skull.
What?
Skull.
Oh, and so okay, well, one at a time here. Number one, do I have to wash my hands before touching the Megillah? There is a halach in Shulchan Aruch in Siman Kuf Mem Zayin Sif Aleph. Aser lechos Sefer Torah Arum. It is aser to hold a Sefer Torah Arum. Arum literally means naked. This is a Gemara in Megillah Daflam Beza Med Aleph that Kala Oche Sefer Torah Arum. Anyone know the end of the sentence? Nikvar Arum. Exactly. So Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to hold the Sefer Torah with your hands undressed. Meaning below mitpachas, Shulchan Aruch says, without some sort of cloth to touch the Sefer Torah. That's why you get an aliyah, you have a minhag that you kiss the Torah, but you don't put your hand on it. You take the gartel or talis or something, and you do it that way. Says the Ramah, v'yeshomrim du'adin shar kisvei kodesh. That some say, all kisvei kodesh, you should not touch with your hands. Now keep in mind, if you treat all kisvei kodesh the same way as the Sefer Torah, it has nothing to do with whether you wash your hands or not. Even if you did wash your hands, you wouldn't be allowed to touch your Megillah. You would need you need an amud or something, you know, something that would hold the Megillah. But Rama writes, velo nagu king. That's not our minhag. But says the Rama, v'tov lahachmir im lo natal yadav. It's good to be machmir, not to touch shar kisvei kodesh, if you didn't wash your hands. So it's appropriate to wash your hands. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah says that while all of this only applies to things that are written in Ksav Ashuris ala klaf, you know, kedin, like a Megillah, he says, the Olam is knowing to be makel, that we allow ourselves to touch a Megillah, but you still have to wash your hands for it. So the question begs itself, is everyone makbid about this? So this is one of those things Rav Shachter often points out, that you know, that people should be aware of, and a lot of people are unaware of this, that people should be aware that you have to wash your hands before you touch your Megillah. If you happen to have a Megillah with a klaf, a real Megillah, if you're using a Chumash, you don't need to wash your hands. But a lot of people are unaware of this. There is a tshuva in the Tzitz Eliezer, Chelik Yutas Simon Samach Zayin, where the Shoal essentially quotes the Magen Avram that the Mishnah Berurah is quoting, that you should wash your hands before you touch Megillah Esther, and he asks, Umadua ha'olam lo nagu lizar bazeh. Why is it that people are not knowing to be careful about this? So the truth is, he quotes Magen Avram that you're not allowed to touch Megillah at all, and he wants to know why people are not knowing to be careful about this. And he goes on to explain that Shar Kisvei Kodesh, the Yisur, doesn't really apply. And he says it's not most of the poskim assume like that, that by Shar Kisvei Kodesh the Yisur doesn't apply, but we are still machmir to at least wash our hands. And that seems to be muskam according to most of the poskim, that one should wash their hands before touching the Megillah. So that is question one. What else we got?
The skulls.
Okay, so the skulls, what number is that? Number eight. Yeah, so the skulls, the question was, can I carry a human skull around on Purim? Now, that's not really a normal thing to ask.
A real one.
All right, now, to be totally honest, I made that one up. But I didn't really make it up. Here's what happened. Today I got a shayla from a school principal where a student told the teacher that was teaching, it was an 8th grade student, maybe a 7th, 8th grade student, told the teacher that, I know we're not learning about bones anymore, but in their science class they were at some point learning about bones. He says, I have a human skull at home, I'd like to bring it into school. And the teacher thought that that was awesome, and he was very excited about the kid bringing a human skull into school. So the teacher just asked the principal, is there any halachic issue with bringing the human skull into school? So the principal asked me if there's any halachic issue with bringing the human skull into school. So I just adjusted it, because I just had that shayla today, so I adjusted it to Purim. I'm like, what else would you do with the human skull? Maybe you'll carry it around with you all day on Purim. So is there an issue with bringing a human skull into school? What? Why on earth does he have a human skull at home? That's a fair enough question. His dad is something, right? Something that explains why he would have a human skull at home. I don't know how to finish that sentence, but his dad is. So, so Nivla Mace. Is it, now, this skull did not belong to a Jew. The Chiyuv Kvura, which is based in Kavod HaBrios and based in a sense of Kavod HaMeis, only applies to a Jew, does not apply to a non-Jew. Nevertheless, a basic sense of human decency should probably develop within one the sensitivity to not walk around with dead bodies or dead body parts all the time. For example, Rabbi J. David Bleich wrote an article in one of his contemporary halachic problems about the bodies exhibit. You know, where they have bodies, actual human dead bodies on display. You know, this one's in the Heisman pose, this one is half-skinned, and this one, you know, and he's just said, his point was, whether or not you can find something halachically wrong with it, there should be a Jewish sensitivity to the value of humanity, to not, to not want to go watch such a display, but I think over here by the skull there's a more halachic issue.
Why are we assuming it's not a Jew?
No, this was not a Jew. Assuming it's not a Jew. You could assume in America, Rove
and Measure. I know, but there's a body.
They said that
for some reason Jews disproportionately donate their bodies.
Jews do disproportionately donate their bodies to science. Yeah, but the bodies exhibit was not so much donation science, it was more Chinese slaves or whatever that were. Oh, really? I thought, okay, that's what I was under the impression. But Kohanim, Tumas Kohanim. So is a Kohen allowed, meaning the kid wants to bring it into school, there are definitely Kohanim in the school, so is that an issue? So what's the issue over here? If it were a Jew, there's no question, absolutely Kohen is not allowed to be there. I remember in the early days of the DRS Yeshiva High School, before they had a building, we were renting space in a Reform temple. It proudly advertised on the front lawn, the first Reform temple on Long Island. That was where we had yeshiva. So in the early days, so the yeshiva rented out one side of the building, and there was still a Reform temple on the other side of the building. And every once in a while, they'd have a funeral in the temple, and all the kohanim got a day off from school. They'd find out they're having a funeral at 9 o'clock in the morning. All the kohanim would go across the street to the Sonnenblick house, and they'd play video games all day or whatever they would do. They just wouldn't. Anyway, So is there an issue? If it's a Jew, there's no doubt. A Jewish mace is metame, b'magam, masa, ohel, everything. How much of a Jewish mace? So this is just bone, right? So bone is a very interesting question. It's a skull. It's not the whole body. So I forgot exactly what the halach is. I think you need shidra v'gul goldas in order to be metame. It's rov binyan. You need either rov minyan or rov binyan to be metame ba'ohel. So l'chora, this would not be metame ba'ohel. It's only a gulgolos, it's not the shidra. So l'chora, it's not metame ba'ohel, but it is metame b'magam masa. How much bone do you need to be metame b'magam masa? Etzem kisa'ora, very tiny amount of bone is already metame b'magam masa. Definitely if it were a Jew. It's a non-Jew, yeah?
What about animals?
Like, no, animals are not metame, there's no tumor. Okay. I mean, there's tumas nevela, but there's no, not on bones of animals. What? Yeah, that's it. There's no issue. Tumas Kohanim are not Musar on becoming Tame from the Vela. They just can't eat Truma afterwards. But the halacha is that Mesei Akum, right? The Pasuk says, Adam Kiyamus Ba'ohel, so Chazal Darshanatem, Kriyam Adam Veinumas Olam, Kriyam Adam, that only Jews are called Adam, so only Jews are subject to Tumas Ohel. What about Tumas Maga Umasa? So Rov HaPoskim assume that non-Jewish bodies are subject to Tumas Maga and Masa, just not to Tumas Ohel. In fact, even when it comes to Tumas Ohel, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Kivrei Ovdei Kochavim, which is Tumas Ohel, when you go over a kever, Nachon Lizoyer HaKohen Milelech Aleihem. It's proper that a Kohen should be careful. And says the Ramah, Afal Pi Sheish Mekilin, I know there are Mekilim, Nachon Nahachmir. Okay, so the Rama says Nachol Nahachmir, and the Shulchan Aruch Nachol Nahachmir. No, this is about Tumas Ohel, because he writes Mitam Dechsev Adam Ki Yamas Baol Vatem Kriim Adam Menav Dechavim Kriim Adam. Says the Shach, Aval B'Mago Umasa Yesh Omrim Da Afilu Amakilu Mosrim V'Chein Nira. That even those who are Mekil with Ohel are going to be machmir with maga and masa of a non-Jewish body. So I would think that if it's brought into the school, so again, it's only the skull, it's not the spine, so probably not metame ba'ohel. So to be in the building, probably not a problem. But the kids bringing it in to show it around and to see to it that that none of the Kohanim are going to touch it, very hard to do. So I would assume that it would be best not to bring it to school. You know, this issue comes up with the Mesa. This is why Kohanim don't go to medical, or should not go to medical school, is because of this issue, because there's a class in medical school that's fairly important called anatomy, where you need to learn anatomy, and they give each student a cadaver to work with over the course of a semester or two, or however long you have to take anatomy for, and you're dealing with a dead body. So it's a guy. If you're not in an Israeli medical school, you're in an American medical school, it's a guy. Probably, yes, you can assume, Ramesh writes in the Shuvah, you can assume Ruba Deruba are Goyim, but it's Tamei B'Maga, it's Tamei B'Masa, And even ohel, we recommend, the Shulchan Aruch says, nachol na'achmir, when it comes to tumas ohel. So what's this? It happens to be, I have a good friend who's a Kohen. We grew up together and he always wanted to be a doctor. And his dad is a doctor. I don't think his father asked any shailas when he was going to medical school. But he is a very frum guy. And he always wanted to be a doctor. And he ended up going to medical school. So I once asked him, how did you do that? how was that? So he said that he had asked Rabbi Tendler before he went to medical school. He said he first called Rabbi Tendler and said, Rabbi Tendler, I'm a Kohen and I'm going to medical school. And Rabbi Tendler said, okay, and he hung up. He said, that's not a shaila. That's you making a statement. You want to ask a shaila, am I allowed to go to medical school? I'll talk to you. So he came to talk to him and he asked him, is there any way that I can go? So Rabbi Tendler happens to hold that when the Shulchan Aruch says, and Rav David Cohen holds this way as well, I spoke to him about it once, that when the Shulchan Aruch says, nachon li zoher, he means that really make her adin its mutter. But if you could avoid it easily, so you avoid Tumas Oel. But make redin Tumas Oel with a guy is mutter. That's why Rav David Cohen told me, he didn't talk to me about medical school, he spoke about going to a wake of a co-worker. So he said, it's only Oel, and Oel is really make redin mutter, so if it's going to help you in the office to go to the wake, so that you can go to the, it's where they have the body out of the, So you can go. He said it's not a big deal. Rav Shechter vehemently disagrees. So Shulchan Aruch says you should be careful about it. So what, we just flippantly drop it? But anyway, so Rabbi Tendler told this guy, Tumas Oel, I'm not worried about, but you're not allowed to touch the body, and there's no heter for that. So he said, if you can make it through anatomy class with a cadaver and never ever touch the body, then fine, you can go to medical school. So the guy did it. How did he do it? So it won't help. So how did he do it? The way he did it was that you don't get your own cadaver. Every two or three students get a cadaver to share. What? Exactly. So one person is like the note taker, and the other person is the one that's hacking away at the body. So he said that he had the other guys hacking away at the body, and he was the note taker. And Rabbi Tendler told him, if you're going to try to pull this off, you better be really strong in your grades in anatomy, because if you're not, they're going to realize what you're up to. Meaning they're going to be like, why, they're going to try to explain things to you here, look here, touch this. So you better be at the top of your class. So he worked so hard. He said I think he was an Einstein. He was the second in his class in anatomy. He said he was, in fact, so good at anatomy that when the school was having visiting students, they wanted to do presentation, a dissection. So they called them, they wanted their top anatomy students to do the dissection. So they called them up and they said, would you mind doing the dissection? It's my grandmother's birthday or whatever. He came up with some excuse. So anyway, can you carry a skull around on Purim? So if it's in a box or something like that, so then it's probably no problem because the coin's not going to be, you don't want to hand it to him because it could be masa. So probably not a good idea to carry a skull around on Purim or to allow a child to bring a human skull in for show and tell. I remember when I was learning in YU, for one semester, 1 year actually, I learned in these small Sephardi based medrash. They have like a little Sephardi based medrash where Ben Chaim learns in the Morgenstern dorm. There's like a little based medrash where it used to be Rav Soloveitchik's apartment, I think, back in the day. So Ben Chaim learns with a few Sephardi guys there, and he gives them like the smicha classes, and he comes in, I've seen him do this, it's funny, he comes in without a sefer, telling him, read Sifkat and this, just directing, and one day he brought in a sheep's head, because he had done shechita in his basement the night before or something, I don't know what goes on there, and he brought in a sheep's head to yeshiva. So the guys were loving it. He was showing them different things in it, and he had in a plastic bag, like a shopping bag. So I remember the chevra afterwards, it was at a time that security was beefing up and checking all the bags when you go to the library. So the guys brought their bag to the library across the street, and the security guard said, what's in the bag? And they're like, they open up the bag, the security guard looks and is like, okay, you can go. So the kid goes, what would I have to bring for you to not let me go? I literally brought a severed head and you let me in. What would I need to bring? But I don't know why I mentioned that story. Yeah, that would not be a tumah problem. All right, what else on this list is
there a notion of Israel for
Yeah, in fact, in Yivam's Kufyud Gimel, Kufyud Dal, where it talks about the Yisur of Los Achilim, one of the examples the Gemara gives is to be Metame Yekohen Katan. Yeah, you're not allowed to be Machil and Isra to a Katan, so you're not allowed to allow a Katan to...
How about Yigilim, so that's not
Yigilim? Even then, you shouldn't bring a Kohen Katan into a Beis HaKvaros. You know, the Magen Avraham quotes from the Rokeach, that that the reason a pregnant Kohenes, a pregnant Eishes Kohen, is allowed to go into a cemetery is because it's a Svek Sveka. Maybe the fetus is a girl, and even if it's a boy, maybe she'll miscarry, so it's not a Bar Kayama. Sounds like without the Svek Sveka, it would be a problem, but it's a tiny little baby. Why would it? Apparently it matters. It's a Shvera Rokeach anyway, because it's Tuma Balua, so it shouldn't be Tame anyway, so there's a lot of Torah written on that. But you see, already at a very young age, Los Achilim, the Yisra of being Machil and Yisra to a child, applies even at the youngest age. It's before the age of Chinuch. It applies even when the baby is very, very young. You're not allowed to feed him Tarfus. So that would apply even for children. Well, what's the next one?
Kormishpil.
Is that in here what you say? What? Which way is that? What? Oh, no, we're doing the number ones for now. Okay. So the Purim Shpil, what number is the Purim Shpil? Number five? So Purim Shpil is an interesting... it's an interesting discussion. Rav Avadia is very strongly against it. Now, what good comes out of the Purim Shpil? So what good comes out of it is Simchas Purim. You know, the Bir Alach and Sim Tafresh Sadi Hay says that, even though the Gemara says Chai V'Nishlo V'Sum Poryad L'Yad B'Nor Hamel Baruch Mordechai, you shouldn't allow drinking on Purim to affect Kiyumei HaMitzvos A Ki Hu Zeh. It shouldn't have any impact whatsoever on one's ability to be Mekayim Mitzvos. So for Simchas Purim, we don't sacrifice mitzvos. On the other hand, yes, we do. Meaning, and it's explicit in the Ramah at least, that let's say you cross dressing, the Ramah is explicit, damaging and paying for damages. There are things that we do take liberties with for whatever reason on Purim to create the sense of Simchas Purim. Now, the objections to it are several. First of all, there's an issue of kavurim b'zayin of tamid chacham, because typically at a Purim Shpil, they're making fun of the Rosh Yeshiva or the new Rebbe in Yeshiva or whatever. You know, they'll do something that will be mevaza the Rebbe. The Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Yutes on Beis says that Yerushalayim was destroyed because of b'zayin tamid chacham. So we try to stay away from that. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that tamid chacham shmachla kvado. But the Rivash writes in the Tshuvan Sim Reishchav, yeah, Shemachal al Kvodo. Normally, what they're doing, it's not a question of are they standing Malo Kamasa for him, it's a question of being Mevaza, the person. So, if it's an issue of being Mevaza, I actually just did an interview on the radio with, I was the interviewer, and the interviewee was Rav Daniel Feldman. Who wrote a whole book about Lashon Hara in contemporary society and wrote three books about Ben Adam L'Chavero, including about Onas Tvarim and several other topics. So one of the things I asked him about is the Purim Shpil. And the reason I asked him is because he was the star of the Purim Shpil in Rav Shachter Shir and YU for a very, very long time. So I asked him, he said, well, you're asking me about something that's very close to my heart and that I'm a little bit biased about. But there is, he acknowledged, one has to have a very delicate balance, meaning idiosyncrasies, things like this. Rav Shachter has a thing where, I don't know if he still does it, maybe he got better glasses, he used to bring two pairs of glasses to shir, because he needed his reading glass, one pair of glasses to read and one pair of glasses, and he would change his glasses when he was reading and when he was looking up. So the entire spiel, Rav Feldman, at that time it was Daniel Feldman, which is going like this the whole time with two pairs of glasses, back and forth. So that's not Mevaze Rav Shechter in any way. It was in good fun. It was in good humor. It's a very delicate balance how to do that. I've been at a Purim Shpil where there's a Rebbe in the yeshiva who maybe doesn't speak so clearly, and the Talmidim are making fun that he doesn't speak clearly and they're mumbling everything. And that's fine amongst the Talmidim. Everyone knows that he's a fantastic Rebbe and that everyone learns so much from him and that they do understand what he says. But there were parents of the Talmidim and board members at the Purim Spiel. So all they see is that, oh, this guy doesn't know how to communicate and that he's a... And I it's all in good fun. Yeah, but that sticks with them. That's it. It could really be damaging. So it is, it's not pashut. Onos devarim, halbanas panim, noach lahapalats, mulatol kivshinesh, gemarin sotah daf yud says, v'al yad m'tei chaver barabim, and it could be that we take that literally even. The Torah says, lo sanuish es amiso, you're not allowed to, and the Gemara b'metzia, nun chesem beiz, refers, understands that it's not about money, onos mamon, it's about onos devarim. And apparently, onas dvarim is worse than onas mamon. And there are several. The Gemara goes through several reasons why onas dvarim is worse than onas mamon. You can return onas mamon if you overcharge somebody. You can return it. You can't undo onas dvarim. It says dafka v'yareisa me'lokecha in the context of onas dvarim. No such v'yareisa me'lokecha in the context of onas mamon. Because whether you want to cause pain through your words or not, it's often not readily apparent to other people. Only Hashem is really aware of our true intentions when we're doing these things. You may be getting too much of a geschmack in making fun of somebody else. So we have to be reminded, v'yareisa me'elokecha. So this is it's not something that should just be dismissed, that it's all Purim and therefore it's all okay. The issue of causing someone emotional pain can be violated even without saying a word. Lo sanu is just stuff that we call it onas dvarim, but it really has nothing to do with dvarim per se. So these are things to be careful about. Contemporary poskim, Rav Vadia could not have been stronger in his wording against it. He was, he quotes all these gemaras. Lo char v'Yerushalayim el Hashem bizu batamin chamim. Ma'aseh Rav Elazar Rav Shimon shenen al shoshashama zilzul Talmud Chacham b'shasak, that he was punished because he didn't do anything when he heard of the zilzul of the Talmud Chacham. And he quotes some unbelievably strong mar makomos and stories about just how damaging it can be. However, on the other hand, there is a festive atmosphere that should prevail on Purim. And in order to maintain that festive atmosphere, we do things. We let loose a little bit more on Purim. We drink a little bit more than usual. We are a little more reckless in the way that we dance or whatever else. That there are things that we do to create a festive atmosphere. But one has to be very careful with the balance. A little more festive atmosphere on a typical day. Rav Daniel Feldman would not go into our shop this year and do like this with the glasses to make fun. But on Purim, it was all in good fun. On a typical day, he wouldn't imitate his voice. But on Purim, it's all that's all in good fun. But you have to be careful not to cross any lines. I do think that it's not a great idea, at the very least, not a great idea that yeshivas put their Purim spiels up on YouTube. Because that very often opens it up to a broader audience where they don't know, yeah. Right? Where they don't have the same sensitivities.
Yeah. When you're making fun of someone, why does it matter whether you're doing it just for fun or people think it's serious?
No, it's a matter of the way they take it. I mean, if they take it as good fun, the person who you're...
Like the person you're making fun of or the people watching?
The person you're making fun of.
You said that when they were making fun of the Rebbe with the stutter... It was okay for the guys, they just thought it was funny, but they understood kind of like he's a real Rebbe, but the parents thought this guy just can't.
So because of that,
it's
I think...
It's still bizarre either way, whether you're doing it to laugh at him or you're doing...
No, because if it's just an idiosyncrasy, so he speaks a little less clearly or a little more quickly or a little more high-pitched or whatever, but when you exaggerate it to an extent, so when you're exaggerating and it's in front of everybody who knows and they know that it's just an exaggeration, like take the glasses thing, right? So everyone knows it's an exaggeration, But if people don't know, then it makes the person look like a madman, or it makes the person look like like no one understands anything, and that could be damaging. It could be damaging to his reputation. It could be damaging to his parnasa. So I think bringing it to a broader audience is something people should be very, very careful about.
Impersonating voices, where's that line? I mean, if you're not doing it in a way that puts down the Rebbe in any form.
Yeah, so if it, you know. So,
and that's how we talk. I mean, you're just doing an impersonation of that person, like you do anybody. You know,
good impersonation.
Right, right. I don't think there's anything wrong with that person. Most of the time, people don't mind when you, you know. Again, you have to know the sensitivities of the person. I think, you know, they, for years in the Nativ Aryeh brochure, there was a picture of Rav Bina with one of the Talmidim who dressed up as Rav Bina in Purim.
Yeah, there still is.
And it's still in there. And he loved it. He loved it because, you know, if you know the character.
He himself said, he's like, yeah, like, he tells the boy all the time around Purim, like the Bina are very sensitive. He's like, I'm not sensitive. Like, he's like, I don't mind.
Yeah, so it's something to be. Now, I don't know of a single person that ever went to the Nativ Aryeh and didn't come out with a Rav Bina impersonation, but it's. All right. So do we have time for one more? Yeah, we have time for one more. Which one?
We do the wall, breaking the wall.
Okay, number nine. Do I have to pay for my Rebbe's wall that I put my head through on Purim? What about his goldfish that I ate? I was talking to Rabbi Aryeh Cohen this past week, and he hosts a lot of people for Purim Suda and post Purim Suda, and it gets kind of labedik. And I was talking to him, I was saying, like, you know, for the first time in a while, I'm going to be having like a lot of college age boys at my house on Purim. You know, with high school age boys, you don't even have wine on the table at all. So I said, you know, it may get a little labedik in my house more than usual. So he was saying, oh, you should tell Alana to call Shandy, my wife to call his wife, they're old friends. She'll tell her all about it, you know, and how to handle it. So he was telling me that, like, you have to know, like, how to assess different types of damage. Like, when the kid put his head through the sheetrock, like, that looks bad. Because it looks like a gaping hole in the wall. But sheetrock is nothing to fix. You just fix sheetrock. It doesn't. He said the worst, much worse, is like fancy furniture that gets nicked a little bit. Because it's impossible to fix, and every time your wife sees it, she remembers it. You know, it's like it's a constant reminder of what happened. At the, so it's a very interesting perspective. So my son was telling me that last year, apparently, at... I guess I gave away at whose house, but the one of the bachurim was so inebriated that he took a goldfish that one of the children had won in, and he took it in a cup of water and he said a shakolnia bivaro and he drank down. So now the question is, okay, so that's Baltashaktu and everything else, and you know, okay, so he violated something, but whatever, Baltashak. So the question is, do you have to pay for damage done in that regard? The source of this whole sugya, we once discussed this, I think, the source of this whole sugya is Tosfos Maseches Sukkah. Tosfos Maseches Sukkah writes on the Mishnah, says, Miyat tinokos shamtu l'vein v'olchun esrogehem, that at the end of Hoshana Rabba Davening, you don't need your sukkah, your dalminim anymore. So from the kids, they would miyad tinokos shomtin lulavim va'ulchun esrogehem. So Rashi says it means they'd go over to the children, they'd rip their lulavim out of their hands, they'd grab their esrogehem out of their hands and take a bite out of it. They would mug the little children. And Tosfos says, Rashi, you're not teaching the word miyad correctly. The word miyad in Shas doesn't mean from the hands of. It means immediately. It means right afterwards. The kids themselves would throw their lulav, they'd eat their esrog, it was part of the atmosphere. Batos says, la halacha, you're correct. They're allowed to do that. They're allowed to mug the children. Aye, but it's not your lulav, not your esrog. How could you do that? It's part of the festive atmosphere. So it says, l'mashul, just like when you go to a wedding and there are people that come jousting on horses and they damage each other's horses and they rip each other's shirts, that's okay. It's fine. You don't have to pay for it. There's no problem. It's part of the simcha. And this is quoted in the Ramah in two places in Hilchos Purim. One, the Ramah says, chotvim zeh mizeh, and it's not a violation of sigzal. So, for example, your friend is about to take a bite of food with his fork. You can grab the fork out of his hand right before it reaches his mouth and take it yourself, and that's just fun. It's just funny. So you're allowed to do that. And the Rama writes that if in the course of a celebration of the dancing or whatever else of Purim you do some damage, you don't have to pay for it. Now the question is why. So one possibility is that if I'm inviting, people that, let's say if this Rebbe invites a whole bunch of people to his house, and this is what happens every year, and he keeps on doing it, he keeps on inviting them to his house, obviously it's because that's what he wants. He's interested in that kind of atmosphere, and that kind of atmosphere leads to, within reason, you know, a lot of noise and some minor damage to the house. And that's what typically happens. And that's okay with it. Not everyone has a shack in their backyard that they could. So he's okay with it. And if he's mochel, so then mechila works. The other possibility is that when Chazal wanted to make sure that there be a certain atmosphere at a chasana, at Purim, they you can't have that atmosphere if everyone is being super careful. So Chazal sort of made it that, you know, the way some of the Achronim say, they were mafki Hashem Adam HaMazik. They said, you're not another Mamazik in Purim. You're not another Mamazik at the Chasana. In order to create that sense of atmosphere, that atmosphere of festive sort of atmosphere. Nafkamina, what if you're not Mazik, the person who invited you? You know, you're at a wedding and you're dancing and something goes flying and is Mazik some old guy sitting at a table, you know, 30 feet away. So in the circle, you can say, okay, anyone who goes into that rowdy circle is being mochel. But if you're mafkia shem adam mazik, because you're actually participating in dancing, so then you wouldn't even have to pay for the damage done over there. Or what if you did significant damage? So Mishabur writes, quotes of Bach, it would be mechalik between significant damage, hefsim ruba and hefsim muad, between physical damage and monetary damage. So if you did significant damage or major physical damage, so that maybe there's no mechila, the guy's not going to be mochel. You could argue that that's not really enough community, even if I'm rafki Hashem adam mamazik, it's only within reason. If a person is completely posheya, you know, then that's beyond all limits, but within reason. So a little hole in the sheetrock here or there, probably the guy's putter from paying, certainly if that's what the Rebbe is expecting. So I think, strictly speaking, probably the putter from paying. Okay, we can go on with this all night, but we'll stop here.
For the goldfish.
I don't think he has to pay for the goldfish, probably not. Although that's crazy. That's crazy. Maybe he does because it's so far beyond... Yeah, I don't know.
It's
a very cheap damage, that's true, right. So in the grand scheme of things, yeah.
But it's also like, you got the free value.